This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to the August 3rd, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. We're here today to talk about Social Security, where it's been, where it is now, where is it going. And to lead us in that discussion is John Elliott, co-host. John is a retired seminar presenter. He answers the tough, techie questions that people email in. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Bob.
All righty.
And Lester.
Good to have you here. And we have Lester Austin, our guest, a retired senior public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration. So he's here to talk about where Social Security has been now and where it's going. Good morning, Lester.
Good morning, Bob and John. Fantastic to be here and joining you this morning.
Yeah, well, folks, strap your seatbelts on. Lester's not shy and very knowledgeable, as well as John. So one of the questions that I get in class that, of course, I would defer to you all is, how do I coordinate Social Security maximization relative to my total income? In other words, if I'm going, it's always, I suppose, better to have more income, but if you were to take Social Security earlier, that income might never be there. Well, I won't say might, it won't be there. So how do we coordinate that?
Well, first of all, if a person has maximum earnings this year, that maximum earning that they pay Social Security taxes on at 6.20% is $137,700. And a lot of times you hear folks say, well, I put all this money into Social Security. Well, let's use that $137,700. That person this year on 6.20% will pay a maximum of $8,537.40 into Social Security. So what Social Security looks at is a person's total earnings over their high 35 years of earnings and come up with what is called the primary insurance amount. And that's what a person is paid at their full retirement age.
So the primary insurance amount is the amount that they're going to collect from Social Security, and that's based on years in Social Security and the coverage, correct? So not everybody earns the maximum amount.
That's correct. Everybody will not be earning the maximum amount throughout their working lifetime.
And do you find that when you talk to folks, they understand the calculation? I wish I did.
Not always, but the fact of the matter is looking at those 35 high years of earnings, and even though someone might have 0 years, when you look at that, those 0 years will not adversely affect that computation and paying the person based on their actual contributions.
So then it's 35 years, but every year might not be accounted for in the fact that maybe we didn't work that year.
That's correct.
So if we don't work, the contributions to Social Security from employment requires that you be there because you can't have X percent of zero.
Right. Right now, the average Social Security benefit is $1,503. For someone who's contributed to maximum throughout their working lifetime, that benefit maxes out this year at $3,011.
Okay. So that's the minimum amount that we can get if we qualify, the $1,503?
No, that's the average. I get
a lot less than that.
Okay.
That's what I thought. You have 69 million Americans receiving Social Security. The average benefit is $1,503. But there are many people that are getting much less than that per month.
Okay.
For example, John worked under Social Security. And he also worked under civil service. Well, his Social Security was not that much. So So therefore, he's under that 1503.
Is that right,
well,
John?
That's right. But I also, we've got to then, and we're talking about CSRS retirees, some of whom are obviously listing, like myself, you're going to be hit by the windfall elimination provision unless you had 30 years of substantial Social Security coverage, which would be very hard to do if you worked a full career under CSRS, as I did. So I'm hit by the windfall elimination provision, which, to make a long story short, cuts my Social Security benefit in half of what it would ordinarily be if there were no such thing as the windfall elimination provision.
So John, does this impact primarily people under CSRS?
Yeah, the first people, of course, as they know, are covered by Social Security throughout their federal career. So they're not ever affected by that. They get full Social Security just like any other person from the private sector. So it just falls on the CSRS people. Now, CSRS offset people, once they become CSRS offset, are covered by Social Security. So I've seen when I used to do seminars, I'd have usually one or two in my class, not a lot of people, but I had students that would, under CSRS offset, that would be approaching the 30-year threshold where they could get their full Social Security benefit. But a lot of them, most of them weren't, still didn't get 30 years, but many of them were in the 21 to 30 year category. And while they were still hit by the windfall, it was less. Once you hit 21 years, the effect of the windfall becomes less and less and less each year. So if you have 25 years of service, it's less than if you had 22 years of service, and so on until you get 30, and then the windfall's wiped out altogether. So that's not uncommon if you're covered by CSRS offset.
Okay.
Right, because the windfall elimination provision came into effect in 1986, and what that provision of the law has indicated is that those individuals that have worked under Social Security and under the Civil Service Retirement System, they're going to be affected by what is called the windfall elimination provision. And what that provision is, just making it simple, if a person is entitled to a Social Security benefit of $1,000 or less, and they're also entitled to civil service, they can cut it in half, that Social Security benefit. So if it's $1,000, their eligibility would be $500. If it's $1,000 or more, this year, 2020, they can just take $500 off of it. For an example, someone that'll be entitled to $1,500 a month, take $500 to still get $1,000.
Okay. And now, do people understand this after you've explained it to them? Because it might be much to try to absorb all that just by saying you're impacted by the windfall elimination provision. Sounds horrible.
Well,
it seems unfair to some people, and for years, various congressmen, particularly with large federal constituencies, have introduced legislation to repeal the windfall elimination provision and the government pension offset, which we can discuss if you want later. But but they've never gone anywhere. So,
What has happened, John, is the fact. The fact of the matter is, when you look at the windfall elimination provision, when Social Security calculates their benefit, they look at a person with low earnings throughout their working lifetime to give them more. Because those folks that had high earnings, they were able to save and able to invest. So what happened is you had civil servants, people working on the Civil Service Retirement System that may have had a part-time job only under Social Security. And they paid that person and a person with longevity, with low earnings, the same amount. So to make that fair, they were giving those individuals with civil service an unintended windfall. So Congress in 1986 passed this into law to make it equitable across America.
Okay, how many people understand it the first time you explain it?
For me, well, once I've explained it, they understand it because they see that their work under Social Security was usually prior to civil service, or they might have had some during civil service, which was only part-time, and they had low earnings. So they understand that those individuals that had a life of low earnings were entitled to a higher benefit than them because they also will be entitled to a civil service benefit.
Okay, now that we have the benefit calculated, it has a it has an impact on financial planning. Not a direct impact, but certainly an indirect, because somebody that's covered under Social Security, generally we think of somebody under FERS, but it could be somebody under CSRS with some outside income. And then the question is when I'm doing my planning, when do I elect to start taking Social Security? Now, the earliest date you can take it is when the individual's how old?
62 minimum.
Okay, and if you wait till the latest date, so there's a minimum amount and then there's a maximum amount, but the maximum amount wouldn't be to their benefit until what age?
Social Security calls now is a person's full retirement age. And that depends on what year they were born. For persons born between 1943 and 1954, 66 is the full retirement age. And then it continues to escalate by 2 months. For those individuals born 1960 and later, their full retirement age is 67. So when you look at that group, born between 43 and 54, 66 is full retirement age, they can take their benefit as early as 62, and they would have a 25% reduction in that 100% benefit. For those individuals born 1960 and later, 67 is the full retirement age, and they will have a 30% reduction in their benefits if they're elected as early as 62.
Okay, John, let me ask you, when you presented this to the retirement classes, did you find that people would say, well, I'll stay on the job longer so that I'll get more Social Security? Or do they say, I want to retire at this date and maybe I'll make it up somehow?
That's a good question. I found overwhelmingly, and this is because people would have, as federal retirees, were going to have other resources in addition to Social Security. Most of them would say, I'm going to at least wait till my full retirement age so I get 100% of my benefit. But many, when we explained delayed retirement credits, where you can delay up to age 70 and get 8% a year added to your full retirement benefit. So if you want to get the highest amount possible for yourself, you could postpone collecting till age 70. So as Lester talked about, a bulk of the audience were born between 43 and 54. So if they waited 4 years beyond 66, they'd get 8% a year prorated monthly. So if they waited till the 70th birthday, they'd get 32% over and above that 100. They'd get 132% of their benefit. What I did, because I didn't really need my Social Security benefit to survive, my plan was to wait till age 70 to get the maximum benefit, which is I clicked in a little early between 69 and 70 because of the hack a few years ago to OPM. I didn't want anybody claiming my Social Security benefit before I did, and I don't know if that was a realistic fear or not, but I waited almost till age 70 to collect my Social Security benefit.
Okay, thanks. I think it's time for a break so the folks can take notes, and then we'll come back and do some more Q&As and more analysis. Thank you.
Life insurance is a conversation worth having. As a civilian federal employee, you have access to exclusive coverage from WEPA, the life insurance choice of over 46,000 feds and their families. With WEPA Group Term Life Insurance, you can apply for up to $1.5 million in portable coverage at a competitive price. Last year, the average fed who switched saved $375. WEPA is a proud sponsor of For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. WEPA has been ensuring the future of feds and their families for more than 75 years. To learn more about life insurance for feds by feds, visit waepa.org today.
Welcome and welcome back to the August 3rd, 2020 For Your Benefit radio show. And by the way, WEPA is the fine organization that sponsors this program. Anyway, so what we have today is we have Lester Austin, who is a retired senior public affairs specialist, lectured on Social Security, talked to different groups, helped people out, as well as John Elliott, who prior to, quote, retiring from the presentation business in the seminar, he answers all the tough questions that come into the email. So when we last talked, we talked about different things, but what about Social Security's impact on financial planning? But I think both of you alluded to it. But let's look it square in the eye. So somebody might say, what's that got to do with, I'm going to get it as soon as I can. I don't want to wait to get more. I want to enjoy it while I can. And others would say, no, I'm going to let it ride, and I'm going to get the maximum because I feel that I'm going to be rewarded for that financially. So what'd you find when you talk to classes like that, John?
Well, as I said, because the audience is federal employees, either covered by CERS or FERS, they have other resources to draw. So as I said, they tend to wait. Their plan is to tend to wait later, and I would say that is a good idea. If you can do it. I mean, if you need your Social Security benefit to survive, then you better go get it at 62 or whenever you feel you need it. But that's not most federal employees. Now, many non-federal employees, that is the case, that don't have other resources. Social Security may, sadly, for many, many people in America, is their only source of income. So obviously their tendency would be to take it earlier rather than later. The other factor in the decision whether to take early or later is how long you think you're going to live. Now, if you wait till, say, your full retirement age to collect, which would be 100% of your benefit, as we said earlier, then the break-even point is about 80 years of age. So if you live, it depends on what cost of living raises you've got. And of course, Social Security is indexed to inflation. So let's say it's 80, that's close enough. If you live beyond 80 and you waited, you're ahead of the game because you waited and you got a higher benefit. But it takes you about that long, anywhere between 12 to 14 or 15 years, depending on inflation, to get back those benefits that you didn't take those 4 years, say, between 62 and 66, for example. So that's a factor. So if you have family longevity on your side, you might consider taking it later if you don't need the money right away. If you're in good health, if you have good, healthy lifestyle, you could kind of gamble that you'll pass the break-even point and where you start collecting more money than you would have over your lifetime than if you'd taken it earlier. So that's something you should consider. And people usually can figure that out themselves. I mean, I probably talked about it in a seminar, but, it's something they could easily understand is, what I just described, what you should take into consideration.
Yeah,
So that should be part of your financial plan. That is an integral part of your financial planning. And if you're FERS, which most well, what, 95% of current federal employees, probably higher than that now. I've been out of the government. But it's right. Well into the 90 percentile are FERS covered. Well, Social Security is the third leg of their retirement. You got the FERS annuity, you've got your TSP account, and then you've got Social Security. So Social Security is more important for FERS employees than CSRS employees. And
just like John said, Social Security is only one leg of that three-legged stool. So you got to make sure that when you go to sit on that stool, that all legs are firm, because, like you say, you got your retirement, your investments, and Social Security. So that's the third leg of it. And Social Security, on average, for an average worker throughout their working lifetime, is about a 42% replacement rate of their one's pre-retirement earnings. And what else is important is that, as John indicated, when you take the benefits at age 62, it takes you anywhere from 13 to 15 years before you hit what is called the break-even point. So therefore, a lot of times a person could be eligible and entitled for the benefit, but because they have other income, they will delay receiving the Social Security and then gain that 8% per year up to age 70. But one must look at their particular situation, their health, longevity in their family, and their own particular situations as far as their saving and investments as to when it is best for them to begin to receive their Social Security.
Yeah, I worked for the federal government, I think, for 4 months once. And one of the presenters were the same age, and we had a discussion. We never had an argument. And this person says, I'm going to take it the first day that I can. And I said, no, I'm going to wait till the last day. Income levels probably the same. And, you know, my thought process after talking to somebody that really knows this stuff says, well, maybe I should take it early. Then I go, well, mothers and fathers father didn't live a particularly long time, mother did. So I said, law of averages might be on my side. And thus far, it's only been 3 years, I feel good that I did it. My friend, again, we're very friendly. He doesn't say, gee, you really messed up. You could have done X, Y, and Z earlier. But it was mathematics and then heredity. So maybe I'm a little bit more analytical sometimes than I should be, but that's what I did. So,
And Bob, just like you're saying, really it breaks down to it's one's personal choice as to when they want to receive it. Long ago, before you had the financial advisors and the numbers that you have today, persons would ask us at Social Security, when is it best for me to retire? And we would explain it to them, and we'll indicate that when you take the benefits at age 62, that it would take you anywhere from 13 to 15 years to hit what I earlier spoke on, the break-even point. And then we'll say, look, when you take the benefits at age 62, you're receiving additional years. But then the question comes and say, will I live past full retirement age? No one can answer that question. So we used to say, come early and stay late. But now with financial advisors and folks investing their money differently, a lot of folks want to wait to get the 32% increase over that 100% benefit. But like we all know.
That's a good point.
You're taking a chance.
When you bring up financial advisors, every financial advisor I've talked to, including my own, or read advice from a financial advisor, says if you can delay your Social Security benefits, do so. If you can afford to, do so.
Right.
All righty. So this is all based on a collection of numbers. So how does somebody, can you apply to get a history of what you've contributed to Social Security going back to your first job, if you will?
A person could easily get the information by going to socialsecurity.gov, socialsecurity.gov, click on it, stick on it, and stroll through it. And I want you to go to creating one Social Security account. And once you have created that account, it's steps there that will be explained, and it's so easy to do that. And once they have created their account, they're going to get that statement that normally they get in the mail. They'll be able to access that online. Social Security's website is safe and secure. They have people working 24/7 to make sure that the encryption, the security of that website is safe and secure. So therefore, the information that you're getting from there is accurate. You'll be able to do what is called the benefit estimate. You can see what you'll be entitled to at age 62, 65, and full retirement age.
So here's a question then. If I've listened to both of your good comments, and I'm still a little, I won't call it mystified, but I just don't know. Can I go to a Social Security office and have a meeting with a Social Security rep?
Right now, all offices across America for Social Security are closed based on the COVID-19 situation.
Okay.
So what one could do is, like I say, create them an account. They can access that information once they have created an account, and they can look over their record. If there's some problems with the information that Social Security has, an employer didn't report, something else might have happened, they can correct that information. To contact Social Security, I would advise a person to go to socialsecurity.gov and go to the locate a local office, just where it says search, type in locate a local field office. Right there, they can type in their zip code. Once they have typed in their zip code, they can call that local Social Security office during this COVID-19 situation. And just the last data that show there have been over 500,000 calls to the local Social Security field offices, and those calls are being answered in less than 2 minutes.
Wow.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic.
I remember.
Right, because the office of those, so Social Security has created a way for folks to contact the local office in their jurisdiction by going to the website, just typing a zip code, that office address and phone number will come up. They call the phone number and somebody will be there to assist them.
All righty, so Social Security workloads are being worked on during our era?
Yes, the overall workloads are being worked due at this time, but as I indicated, the offices are closed, so they're not taking any visitors in those offices. If someone wishes to contact Social Security, again, just visit the website, go to the field office locator, plug in their zip code, and contact the local office by phone.
Okay, I found I found in contacting them, I just found out when they first, quote, opened. So whether it was 7 a.m. or 7:30 a.m., I started dialing like 30 seconds before the time, and I got right through. But I think if you wait till midday, they're very busy. And you
know, they're answering the phone.
Yeah.
Like I say, over 500,000 calls have been answered in less than two minutes. This pandemic.
Okay, there's something called Vision 2025.
Vision 2025.
What's that?
Well, with Vision, again, if a person visits Social Security's website, they can go to the search engine and plug in Vision 2025. And what that is Social Security's vision for serving the American public from now in the future. That vision became evident in 2015 is when it was designed. So right now it's been 5 years. They want to provide the customers with superior customer experience. We want exceptional employees and innovative organizational skills. So we're looking at all these things Social Security is to improve the service to the American public each and every day. So once you visit the website, like I said, visit in the search, put Vision 2025, and you'll see that they is three priorities: a superior customer experience, so the customer relation span, a lifetime, and supported by access to accurate, real-time, and secure information and services; exceptional employees, empowered, knowledgeable, compassionate, and engaged employees are proud to contribute in a flexible and rewarding environment; an innovative organization. The Social Security serves as a model of organizations' transformation, agility, and service excellence built on continuous improvement or thinking strategy.
Okay, talking about strategy, if I'm eligible for a spousal or a survivor Social Security benefit, but I have my own benefit, I'm going to ask you to tell me which one to choose, but I have to, can I get both? Can I get mine and my spouse's?
There's a possibility that you could get both, depending on what you would be entitled to on your own. Say, for an example, your spouse is entitled to $2,000 a month. You're eligible for 50% of that, so you're eligible for $1,000. So at full retirement age, if your benefit on your own is greater than the $1,000, then you would not receive anything in a living situation on your spouse's record. If it's less than $1,000, Social Security will pay you on your own first, and any difference pay you as the spouse.
How many people know that?
That's how come we're on the radio. Spread the word. Let folks know just what's going on.
If you're a dual-income family, both covered by Social Security, or if I should say, if you've had a mother and father that both worked, they may have had that experience and shared it with you. So there's a set of people that already know that, but probably many don't. And as Lester pointed out, that's why we're on the radio talking about it, and that's why we cover it in the NITP seminars.
All right, here's another question. If I'm receiving Social Security benefits based on a former spouse's earnings, can I delay my own benefit until I hit 70?
Well, what happened is a widow's and widower's benefit, they can begin as early as age 60. So a widow or widower can begin receiving benefits as the widow or widower, and then later at 62 or older, they could switch over on their own records, which might pay them more. They have the right to do that.
All righty. Go ahead.
About that widows and widowers, let me just add this real quick, Bob. If, like John said, both spouses have worked on their own under Social Security, one is eligible for $3,000 a month and one is eligible for $2,000 a month. If that spouse is earning $3,000 a month passes, then the widow or widower can switch over and receive the higher amount.
Okay.
So they would stop their $2,000 and receive the $3,000 a month. Plus, they would receive a one-time death payment of $255.
Okay, and I'm not so sure people know about that death benefit, but you know the listeners, if they maybe have an elder parent or an elder spouse, it's not a ton of money, but it's something. What is it, $265?
It's $255. At one time, that was payable to the spouse, being the widow or widower. If there was no spouse, it was payable to the child or the children. If it was no child or children, it was payable whomever assumed the funeral home responsibilities, or it could be authorized to the funeral home. But at this time, the only parties that could be entitled to that is a spouse living in the same household, or there was an intent to reside together again, or a child who's eligible on the record or could be eligible. Definition of a child is 18 years of age and younger, or 19 and a full-time student in high school. That's it.
All right. Well, that's it, because it's time to take a break. But when we come back, we'll talk about Social Security's impact on financial planning. If I am married, how do I coordinate the timing with my spouse? and others. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final leg of today's For Your Benefit radio show. We're talking Social Security. We're talking Social Security with John Elliott, fellow seminar presenter. He answers the email questions with regards to Social Security issues. Lester Austin, I think I met you, Lester, 35, 40 years ago down in the Patuxent River on some military reservation, and you were just as powerful then as you are now. All righty, so here we go. When should I claim the Social Security benefit? We talked about that, but we alluded to some financial planning. But what role does Social Security play in financial planning? In other words, if I'm retiring earlier or I'm 65 or so, one financial issue is when do I take Social Security, now or later? Or just when it does come in, I probably talk about the tax differential between the two, but in your own cases, when you looked at it, I'm not being nosy, but did finances come into play and say, listen, I could do this now, but financially I'll have a better reward later?
Well, sure. It's part of your financial planning. And the first thing, if you don't estimate what your Social Security benefit's going to be, particularly the FERS people, you're flying kind of blind. So the first thing you should do is you can go to Social Security website, socialsecurity.gov, and they have a calculator. And if you've opened up an account, which just means, coming up with a password and so forth, establishing a password, and I guess a username, the usual drill that you're all used to ad nauseum. Then you can get your earnings record because you need that to get an estimate. And it's very easy and to use. And you'll know pretty much what Social Security benefit you're going to get at various ages. So that's indispensable to your financial planning, is get that done. Once you know, then you can make an informed decision whether you want to take it earlier or later. And again, then you have to estimate also your other resources, like what your TSP account's going to look like when you retire, and what your plans are to start withdrawing. You don't have to withdraw your TSP at retirement either. You can postpone that and let it grow and through your investment choices. Now your first benefit, of course, is an annuity. You're going to get what you're going to get, but you also should go online, and you can do that at opm.gov. There are other calculators available that you can Google that it will estimate your FERS benefit. Or before you leave, you can, a lot of agencies now, it's been a while since I've got, but even when I was in government, had internal online calculators, and where they already loaded in your pay history, and you could easily calculate what your FERS annuity would be. Also, you could also estimate a Social Security benefit and a TSP account balance as well at those internal software tools. So that's what you need to do. if you take a seminar, we teach you how to estimate all these benefits manually if you're so inclined, because you'll take the seminar book with you, which shows how to calculate a FERS annuity or a CERS annuity for that matter, and a Social Security benefit. And you can go to TSP.gov and use their calculator to calculate your TSP benefit as well. So those are indispensable things to do. If because of COVID-19, your agency is just not doing a seminar, and you, like many people in the past, were able to go to a seminar. I don't know if that's the case, but today, but it might be. Yeah, there's still tools available to you at the websites at opm.gov, at ssa.gov, at tsp.gov, where you can come up with a very close and good estimate of what your retirement benefits are going to be. And I'd urge you to do that.
We do a lot of virtual seminars to agencies now that, of course, we didn't do before.
Yeah, that's what I suspected.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
That was before. For my time.
But just like John said, if you are to go to Social Security's website, socialsecurity.gov, on the home page, it shows my Social Security account. You just check out my Social Security statement, change your address, and you can manage your benefits online. That's another way that folks can plan for their financial future. And also on the home page, right there, you see retirement estimators. You can calculate your benefits on your actual Social Security earnings record. And you can do that. And then they have frequently asked questions. A lot of times folks feel that they need a Social Security replacement card. A lot of people can do that on there online and don't have to go into a Social Security office.
Okay, this is an email question. The individual said, I became a citizen a year ago. My job wants me to, I don't know how they wrote this to NITP's website, but nonetheless, it came in. I became a citizen a year ago, and my job wants me to update my status on my Social Security card, or I could lose my job. I'd want to wait to mail in my documents. Can I schedule an emergency appointment? Now, this was maybe written a while ago, because they don't take appointments, as best I understand. But you could call in online, correct?
Right. What a person could do is go to the Social Security website, the field office location, put in their zip code. They're going to have a phone number, and they can contact that local Social Security office. For just going in for that situation that this person is talking about, no, they cannot set up an appointment. But they are, and there's stipulations in place with employers that they cannot take no adverse action based on that situation that has just been described. So the employers know that. For persons that are will be filing to get the number, Social Security number for the first time because they're entering the workforce or state or federal benefits, they can call and make an appointment in order to ascertain a Social Security number.
All righty. There's a question that came in. Why should I be concerned with timing my benefits with my spouse? That one's probably tough, but boots on the ground knowledge, guys?
Well, you look at the two incomes and see what's going on, and they would have to make a decision. If an individual files for benefits and their spouse also files, they're filing for any and all benefits at this time. So it used to be one could take it and another one could delay it and receive off of one's record while theirs was being delayed. Now, anybody born after January 1, 1954, if they file on their spouse's record, they're automatically filing for each and all benefits on their own as well as their spouse's. So it's no more taking one and leaving the other to let it grow for a higher amount.
Okay.
And you should, as a spousal couple, a two-earning couple, presumably, or a retired couple that are getting benefits. You just look at your total income and what do you need to live on, and, or what lifestyle you want to, you know, enjoy, then and decide, you know, if both of you need to claim at the same time, or one can postpone and get higher benefits later, and but the other one needs to feel they ought to claim right or earlier. It's not one size fits all. It's just you look at your total income, what your needs are, and decide when to take benefits.
And that's where the calculator can come in, real handy, Social Security's calculator, so they can figure that out. They can plug in what they're going to receive on Social Security, look at their other incomes, and make a decision as to what is best in their own particular situation.
Excuse me if I asked this question before, but I don't think I did. What are WEP, whatever that is, and GPO, and how do they impact my Social Security? Did I ask that?
Well,
no, you didn't. But
I didn't think so.
At the top of the show, we pretty much covered windfall elimination provision, but we did not cover the government pension offset. So
the government pension offset came into play because you had spouses that were filing on their spouses' records and receiving a very large Social Security benefit, and they had never worked and earned the right to be entitled to that benefit. So now a person that is receiving the civil service retirement and they file on their spouse's record to receive half of their benefit, or being the survivor receiving the widow or widow's benefit, Social Security would look at that civil service annuity, looking at the gross amount, and use 2/3 of that to offset any Social Security benefits payable as the spouse or as the survivor on a dollar-to-dollar basis. So even though one may be eligible, what they could be entitled to would be zero.
Okay. So looking...
Yeah, my wife, take my wife, please. She's a good example. She's a retired CSRS employee. And she will never get any of my Social Security benefit, even after my death, because of the government pension offset.
There's 2/3
well,
of her.
She was working, she could have, but not one. She's been retired 10 years. So she will never get any of my Social Security benefit because of the GPO.
Interesting. To me, I've always had a, I can understand tax law sometimes, but Social Security and I just, it doesn't sink through. So I, more often than not, call up this one particular seminar presenter and drive him nuts. So I believe, too, for the listeners, I'm not just telling you the story to tell you the story, but you can email us questions. With regards to this, and or go to one of the retirement seminars at your agencies. I hope that NITP is presenting it. I would say more often than not it is. Don't call in the show. It's hard to call in the show. And the connections don't always work so good. But you can send us emails to NITPinc.com. Just go to the website. Anyway, you guys, we're getting a little closer to... the end of the show. What do we have, Andrew? 3 minutes. All righty. So final thoughts?
Encourage your listeners to visit Social Security's website at socialsecurity.gov. Click on it, stick on it, scroll through it. There's a lot of information. If you want to find out about Vision 2025, just type that into the search button. Just search and hit Vision 2025 and it'll come up, all the information, create you an account, and also use the calculators. Again, it's so easy, Social Security is just a click away.
Thank you. John?
Well, I certainly echo those that advice. I mean, absolutely crucial to do what Lester just said. If you can attend a seminar, an NATP seminar, I guess you do webinars overwhelmingly. Do you ever do any in person anymore?
No, no.
You can tell how long I've been.
No, we do what do they call it? Virtual.
Virtual seminars. But, you know, I did talk to a fellow who participates in that with NITP, and he said they work pretty well. I mean, I think we all prefer in-person, but certainly now with the pandemic, that's just impossible. So that's I try and do that. Go to your agency HR office and see if they're going to provide any seminars. And you'll be glad you did. You'll learn a lot over how many days, 1 or 2 days or 3 days or however long they are. I've even forgotten. But that's what I would do as well.
Okay, Andrew. We're about done. Andrew says yes. All righty. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And Lester, thanks for being here and educating our listeners, as well as John. John, how long have we been working together, John?
You called me in 2005, and I think in the spring of 2005, I just left one company, and about a month later, I heard you on the phone, and you offered me a job doing retirement seminars.
It was a great day. And
So since 2005, 15 years.
Yeah. And Lester and I, although we didn't work for a long time together, we met a long time ago. Anyway, thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back next week, and have a pleasant one. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.